The truth of problems with the Quran. What Muslims claim, this is what they claim. And they really claim four things. Number one, the Quran is uncreated and exists eternally on clay tablets in heaven. That's in chapter 85, verse 22 of the Quran itself, the preserved tablets. Number two, the Quran was sent down to Muhammad between 610 and 632. Number three, the Quran was completed by Uthman in 652. And then number four, the Quran was perfectly preserved in the last 1400 years. The Quran had no human interference, in other words. That's not going to be number five, the number four. So can you remember those four words? Uncreated, sent down, complete, and perfectly preserved, okay? Just remember preserved. Uncreated, sent down, complete, and preserved. Can you remember those four? Because I'm going to ask you at the very end, did we shut down those four? Okay? Let's see if we can shut down those four. Now, why do they make those claims? Because those claims are in the Quran itself. It makes those claims. The Quran makes these claims. You can see it in chapter 85, verse 21 and 22. This is the glorious Quran inscribed on preserved tablets. You look at any of your commentaries on chapter 85, verse 21 and 22. Preserved tablets means eternal tablets. They have to be eternal because you cannot have any interference from humanity. Once one man changes one word, one letter, it's no longer the Quran. Why? Because the Quran maintains that in chapter 10, verse 15, bring to us a Quran other than this to change it. Say it is not for me to change it on my own accord. Or chapter 18, verse 27, and recite what has been revealed to you of the book of your Lord. None can change his words. No human can, because then it's no longer preserved. It's no longer eternal. And then why? Because Allah himself guards it. Verily, it is we who have sent down the Quran, and surely we will guard it. We meaning Allah himself in the plural form. Don't Christians claim the same about the Bible? No, we do not, and please do not make these claims. We would not say it's eternal. No, it was created by men. We know who wrote it. We put the names to many of the men who wrote the different books. Sent down? No, not sent down. Inspired by God, yes, but not sent down. The Bible was complete. Yes, it was complete in its original form, but we don't have its original form. Has the Bible been perfectly preserved? No, there are changes in it. We know where they are. And that's a big dispute that's happening in the church. Do we accept Mark chapter 16, verse 9 to 20? Is that a change? John chapter 7, verse 53 to John chapter 8, verse 11. The woman caught in adultery. Is that an addition that's been added? We keep it in there because even though the dispute is there, it doesn't change any doctrine. The only one that's really contentious is 1 John chapter 5, verse 7, where you have the Trinitarian formula that's in verse 7. That has been taken out almost of all translations except for the King James Version. They refuse to take it out, and that's the problem. So be careful. Don't take King James with you whenever you go talk to Muslims. Leave it at home. I love the King James, but not that. They will hang you on that if you have it in your hands. Thus, we don't make these same claims, and therefore we do not have to defend what Muslims have to defend. That's the beauty. So what's my remit today? Well, I cannot critique uncreated or sent down because I'm not there in the seventh century. And how do you confront eternality? You can't. But I can critique the second two. Complete, unchanged, perfectly preserved, and no human interference. That I can critique, and that's my remit today. Thus, this is what I want, and this is what you need to ask Muslims. If they make those four claims, then you need to ask them. We therefore want to find one Quran, that one's one Quran, that is from the mid-7th century, from the time of Uthman, 652, that is complete, that's 114 surahs, and that is perfectly preserved, exactly like the book that I have in my hand today. Word for word, letter for letter, the same as this book here. That's what they have to find, because they are the ones that make that claim, not me, not you. So, what is our goal? Well, let's go back the other way. What I want to do is introduce today is if the Quran is eternal, complete, and perfectly preserved, it cannot have any historical errors or anachronisms, as that would suggest human interference, since only humans err, not Allah. Why? Because God would not make any mistakes with his holy word, but man would. Therefore, let's look at 15 historical anachronisms to start this off, which prove that the Quran came not from God, but from man. Let's look through them real quickly. The first one is, first of all, let's define what we mean by that. Doesn't every scripture include historical problems? Ancient books, even those which are considered scripture, are prone to historical difficulties as they were written by men, women who are finite and thus open to error. or they are borrowed from inaccurate sources, or they can either be embellished over time, or scribal errors can creep in when copying from one text to another. The Quran, however, is unique. It is above all that. It is the only text, Muslims claim, which claims to be eternal, without error, or unable to be changed by men, because it is protected by Allah himself. Thus, if we can find even one historical anachronism, it not only proves that it is no longer eternal, but that man can and has changed Allah's holy revelation. So when you look at the Quran, you look at chapter 20 of the Quran, verse 85 to 87 and 95 to 97. But indeed, we have tried your people after you had departed, and the Samiri has led them astray. So Moses returned to his people angry and grieved and said, and what is your case? What are Samiri? Samiri is the Arabic for Samaritan. So here's a Samaritan who usurps Moses and builds the golden calf. Samaritans did not exist at the time of Moses in 1400 BC. Samaritans were created by Sargon II, who came down and attacked the 10 northern tribes of Israel. He came from Khorsabad. He took many of the people there in Israel, took them back up to Khorsabad, then took many of his own people to repopulate the towns. They intermarried with the Israelites that were left behind, and from their progeny came the Samaritan. So there could not be any Samaritan prior to 722 BC. But Moses was living in 1400 BC. That's 700 years earlier. Do you see a problem with that? What about Amos too early? In chapter 17, verse 1, it says, glorified is he who took his slave from a journey by the night from the Al-Masjid al-Haram, which they believe is Mecca, to the Al-Masjid al-Aqsa, which they believe is in Jerusalem. That's why the mosque that was built in 709 by Al-Walid, who's the son of Abd al-Malik, they call it the Al-Aqsa, Masjid al-Aqsa. It's still called that today. It's in the southern wall of the dome of where the Dome of the Rock sits. The problem with that is, folks, here we go. There you see it right there. So there's the Al-Aqsa there, and there's the Dome of the Rock there, and there's the southern wall. There's the whole enclosure. The Dome of the Rock was built in 691. The Masjid Al-Aqsa was built in 710. I said 709. I was off by 1 year. The Miraj, when he went up to the seven heavens, was in 621. And that this is supposedly talking about the Miraj when he goes up there. It cannot even be the Jewish temple. There was nothing there in 621. Those don't even come into existence until 691 and 709. That's 90 to 100 years too late. So obviously, and it cannot be the Jet Temple because the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, 600 years earlier. What about coats of chainmail? In chapter 34, verse 10 to 11, it says, we certainly gave David and we made Pliel for him iron, commanding him make full coats of mail and calculate precisely the links. So this is the links of chainmail. Well, David lived in 1000 BC. The coats of chainmail were not invented until 200 BC, 800 years later. Obviously, whoever wrote the Quran didn't know that historical fact. The Quran attributes crucifixions too early. In chapter 7, it talks about Pharaoh and the two sorcerers and sends at the time of Moses and sends them to be crucified. In chapter 20, verse 7, it says much the same thing. And then in chapter 12, verse 41, the Pharaoh at that time, at the time of Joseph in 1800 BC, they were also crucified. So you have crucifixions twice with Moses and once with Joseph. The problem is this. Moses' Pharaoh lived in 1400 BC. Joseph's Pharaoh lived in 1800 BC. Crucifixions were not even used in Egypt, and they were first introduced in 500 BC. Thus, the Quran's crucifixions are in the wrong place and 1,000 to 1,300 years too early. And then the one crucifixion they should have got right, they got that wrong. It denies the crucifixion of Jesus in chapter 4, verse 157. So can you see, when you look at the historical record, if you're going to say that the Quran gets it correct, then look and see all the historians who supported the crucifixion. You have Thallus, a Greek, and Phlegon, a Greek. They are having a debate in 52 AD, and they're arguing the fact that when Jesus died, the earth shook and the sun went dark. That's 20 years after Christ's death. These are not Christians who are debating this. These are Greek satirists who are debating it. You have Lucian the Greek satirist that writes it in the second century. Mar Serapion, who in his letter to Pagan talks about it in 73 AD. You have Josephus, who is a Jewish Jew living in Rome, writing about this in the first century. And he talks not only about the death of Jesus, he talks about the death of also his brother James. And interestingly, even refers to the fact that the Christians believe he rose from the dead. That's the only reference we have to the resurrection. And then, of course, Tacitus, good old Tacitus, a Roman historian, hated Christians, had nothing good to say about Christians. But he talked about the death of Jesus, and he gives us the date. It happened during the time of Pontius Pilate under the ruling who is the emperor at that time? I can't remember the name of the emperor, but he gives us the name of the emperor. So we know it was in 33 AD. Augustus, under the time of Augustus. So you have here you have Tacitus, a Roman historian, giving us the date for 33 AD. That's why we know what happened. So I've given you Greek, I've given you Jewish, and I've given you Roman historians, right? All living in the first and second century. So when was chapter 4, verse 157 written? 7th century? No. This was written in the late 8th century. That's 700 years too late. It's got the wrong Mary. Surah 19, verse 28, O Mary, you have certainly done a thing unprecedented, O sister of Aaron. Chapter 66, verse 12, says Mary, the daughter of Imran. And then chapter 20, verse 30, shows that this Aaron, my Moses' brother. So here you have Mary, the mother of Jesus, who has two brothers named Aaron and Moses, and all of them are the daughters and sons of Imran. Folks, take a look and see where those people are. They're in the Bible. That is Imran of the Bible. That is Aaron, who is the brother of Moses. And they do have a sister named Miriam. But they live in 1400 BC, not Mary, the mother of Jesus, unless she was a very old Mary and lived for 1400 years. All these are sister children of Imran. So can you see? That's a huge anachronism right there. Now, it suggests Mecca is the center of history. We know about this because we talked about this today. The first sanctuary appointed to mankind, Mecca, is the mother of settlements, where Adam and Eve went, where Abraham went, where Muhammad was born, where the Qibla was fashioned. Yet the above implied people have lived there from the very beginning, yet we cannot find any reference to Mecca until 741, over 100 years after Muhammad, if he even lived. Ironically, the only reference to Mecca in the Quran is chapter 48, verse 24. It refers to people who live 600 miles too far north, only names 9 places, most referring to people like the people from Ud, that's from the biblical Uz, or Thamud, that were the Nabataeans, or the Midians, the Midianites, 23, 24, and 7 times. They are over 600 miles too far to the north. It's got the wrong place with the wrong people at the wrong time. These people groups are all 600 miles too far north. There's Mecca way down there. Can you see? That's in the wrong place. So you've got the wrong person at the wrong place at the wrong time. It refers to up to 300 prophets who are all buried there in Mecca. Adam and Eve, Seth, Ishmael, Noah, Hed, Saleh, Queen of Sheba, Daniel, up to 300, all buried in Mecca, all in a praying position, kneeling so they pray so that their lives are preserved so they continue to pray. Yet when they look at all of the, when you look at all the building projects that are going on there in Mecca, we haven't been able to find one. There's another historical problem. This is embarrassing and suggests that the Quran and the tradition did not know their history very well. And then it confuses the Qibla. All the Qiblas that are from up until 706, as we said earlier today, they're all facing Petra. Whether they are from China or India or Jordan or Syria or Israel or Yemen or even Egypt, they're all facing Petra. Mecca is way down here. Up until 706, all of the mosques are facing Petra. We don't get one mosque facing Mecca until 715. Can you see why? This is either confused. That means after 706 up to 822, 12% are facing Mecca, 50% face Mecca, and 38 are confused. We don't really get all the mosques facing Mecca until 822. Folks, that's too late. Yet they have to be facing Mecca by 622. That's 200 years too late. So either those who wrote the Quran fudged their dates, or they knew nothing. They never knew when the mosques were really built, or perhaps Mecca just did not exist. What do you think it is? I would suggest it's the latter. It confuses the Kaaba. There, look at the Kaaba there. Notice that circumambulates 7 times. More than that, and you notice that we know where that comes from. The historical record of Abraham shows that it's 1,000 miles further north. Why? Because the Kaaba is the same thing we have in Jerusalem. It's the same word. The circumambulation 7 times is what the Jews did in Jerusalem. So in every case, it was coming from Jerusalem. They did that because that's what they did in Jericho. 7 times, counterclockwise. Only the Muslims go counterclockwise. They have no idea why. I would suggest they look to Jerusalem to find why. It was first in Jerusalem. Then you notice everything about the Safa and Marwa are all in Jerusalem. And then, folks, it mentions Mecca, but other Arab cities are more historical. We can't find Mecca anywhere. Yet look at Najran is found. The Greeks talk about it. You have Sana, Taif, Yathrib, Khaybar. They're all, the Greek trading documents talk about these significant towns that are up along the Western Plateau. No reference anywhere to Mecca. Mamre is referred to. Petra is referred to. Maghrib is referred to. Why are all these insignificant towns referred to, but nothing about Mecca, which is the most important town because it's the oldest city in the history of mankind? It confuses Pharaoh, the Tower of Babel, and Haman. Chapter 28, Pharaoh said, Eminent One, I have not known you to have a good God other than me, so kindle for me, O Haman, a fire upon the clay and make for me a tower. Chapter 40, it says, well, Pharaoh said, oh, Haman, take a look at that name. Constructs a tower. That name is wrong. Egypt never built any towers. They built pyramids and temples. We can see this in Genesis 11. The Bible gets it correct. Haman was not an Egyptian name, but a Persian name. He is the one that belongs in the book of Esther, chapter 3, verse 1. He was a Persian, part of Xerxes I, according to the Greeks, and reigned between 486 and 465. Pharaoh, however, lived in 1500 BC, and Haman lived in 510 BC. I doubt if they ever met. There's 1,000 years between them. It makes Alexander the Great the most amazing engineer in chapter 18, verse 96. Bring me sheets of iron between the two mountains and wall, he said. Blow with bellows until we have made it like fire. He said, bring me that I may pour over it molten copper. And this is a wall that is big enough to keep an entire army out that's built between two mountains. That would be a pretty enormous wall made completely out of iron. He builds an iron copper wall between two mountains in 330 BC. Now look at, we have three records of Alexander the Great. We have, in all three biographies, there's no reference to any wall. And even if it had been a wall, this would be the greatest engineering feat in the world in the history of mankind. Even today, we don't have walls made out of iron and copper that are that big between two mountains. It refers to futuristic coins called the dirham. In chapter 12, verse 20, a few here dirhams counted out when they were selling Joseph to the Egyptians. Hold on a minute. Dirhams counted out coins at the time of Joseph? Joseph lived in 1800 BC. Coins weren't created, not created until 600 BC by the Lydians. Dirhams were introduced post-661 by the Sufyani family. They were the ones that were a part of the Umayyad dynasty. Muawiyah was one of them. He was the one that introduced the coins, the dirham. Could this be a later redaction? Obviously, you can see, how can you have dirhams at the time of Muhammad if he's receiving the Quran when they were yet to be created for another 30 years? Unless, of course, this is a prophecy and that makes him a prophet. Ooh, lady, I mean, that's what's going on here. So you can see the wrong person, the wrong place. Now let's ask the same thing of the Bible. In Genesis 37, 28, you have the same story and you see that Joseph is sold for 20 shekels. What's a shekel? It's a counted measure. It comes to about 2% of kilos of silver. Not only do we get the right coin, we get the right denomination, we get the right price. According to the Mutnuzi tablets, the price for a slave in 1800 BC was exactly 20 shekels. Folks, can you see how accurate our Bible is? We don't even ask it to. Isn't that beautiful? When you do like with like, we get it right, they get it wrong. The more we scratch, the more we find. The more we find, the more we shine. The more we shine, the more they whine, oh, how sublime. So, conclusion. From these historical anachronisms, we can safely say that the Quran was not created by Allah at all or by any other god. It was not sent down to Muhammad between 610 and 632. It was not complete by Uthman. It was changed in 1300 years, all by mere man, and was finally compiled in 1924. Thus, the Quran is a mere 90, oh dear one, I got that wrong. It's actually 100 years old now. So let's then now go and see what the modern scholars say. What do they say about the Quran? So when you talk to modern scholars like Fethullah Gulen, one Quran, unaltered, unedited, and untampered, he's talking about the fact that there has been no change whatsoever. This is the guy that's in the Turkish Gulen movement who lives now in Pennsylvania, not too far from where I live. Let's talk about Suzanne Hanif, who's another scholar today. She said that the Holy Quran is the only divinely revealed scripture in the history of mankind, which has been, I just pulled this out. Let me push it back in again. Sorry, folks. We'll get her right back on screen. She wants to be seen. So do we. Which has been preserved to the present time in its exact original form. Well, that's maybe some, but let's see what this guy says, because he is much more authoritative. He is one that translated the Quran into English. And what does he say? So well has it been preserved both in the memory and in writing that the Arabic text we have today is identical to the text as it was revealed to the Prophet. Not even a single letter has yielded to corruption. So he's saying that in 1935. And then you have Maulvi Muhammad Ali, who says not even no copy differing in even a diacritical point is met. There has always been contending sects, but the same Quran is in the possession of one and all, a manuscript which the slightest variation in the text is simply unknown. Are you getting a kind of common theme throughout this? They're all saying pretty much the same thing. Not one letter, not one word. Everything is the same. Let's get to Shabir Ali, a good friend of mine. I've debated him six times. He lives in Toronto. He's got his doctorate on the Quran. And he says, we have a copy of the Quran dating from the 790 in the British Museum, known as the MS-2165, Ma'il Codex. Acts 1, we're going to show you that in just a bit. Folks, that's 1,300 years ago. And we can compare that with what we're reading today, and we find them to be exactly identical. Exactly identical. Well, look at what he says next. But what is important to notice is that throughout the age of Muslim history, the Muslims have not. Notice he said 1,300 years then, right? Notice how he's going to change it now. Muslims have not quarreled over what is the text of the Quran, because the text was not known through memory work and through the written materials, handed down right from the time of the Prophet Muhammad. As I said, the two copies that were made 1,400 years ago, now it's 100 years earlier, one which is in Tashkent, Russia. Is Tashkent in Russia? Then you know his geography very well. Has been demonstrated by Ahmed von Denfer in his book called Ulam al-Quran to be an early copy from that time. And we find no difference from that copy to what we're reading today. Dr. Yasser Qari, the world's leading authority on the Qira'at, on the archaic manuscripts, says this. He lives in Houston, though he is from Pakistan. He says, Uthman standardized the copies of the Quran, and from his time up until our time, there has not even been two copies of the Quran that are different, even one letter or one word. The Quran is the most protected of all scriptures, and God has protected his Quran from any kind of alteration, deviation, miswriting, because he says he is going to protect it. All Qurans, even up to our time, conform letter for letter, word for word, with the Uthmanic Mus'haf. To this day, there is no different version of the Quran. There is but one Quran. That's pretty indicative, isn't it? Now, let's look at some modern Muslims. Not one word, not one letter, not even one dot has been changed. So, are you getting the same idea? They're all saying the same thing, aren't they? Word for word, letter by letter, harf by harf, even dot by dot. So that's what the modern scholars are saying. Let's now see what the early Muslim scholars say. Let's see if they're saying the same thing. So let's go ahead. Here you have Ibn Abi Dawud. Some verses were lost. Many of the passages of the Quran that were sent down were known by those who died in the name of Yamama, but they were not known by those who survived them. Nor were they written down, nor had Abu Bakr, Umar, or Uthman by that time collected the Quran, nor were they found even with one person after them. That's Ibn Abi Dawud. Then you have As-Suyuti writing in the 1500s. It is reported from Ismail bin Ibn Hibram, from Ayyub bin Nafi, from Ibn Umar, who said, "Let none of you say I have acquired the whole of the Quran." How does he know what all of it is when much of the Quran has disappeared? Rather, let him say, "I have acquired what has survived." That's quite an admission right there. Here you have Sahih Muslim. He died in 875. We used to recite a surah which resembled in length the severity to Bara'at. I have, however, forgotten it, with the exception of this, which I remember out of it. If there were two valleys full of riches for the son of Adam, he would long for a third valley, and nothing would fill the stomach of the son of Adam but dust. So, some verses are forgotten. And then you have Sahih Bukhari, the most authoritative. That's why he's called Sahih. That means without error. We used to read a verse of the Quran revealed in their connection, but later the verse was canceled. And this is what it was. Convey to our people on the behalf of the information that we have met our Lord and he is pleased with us. So here is part that had been canceled. Parts of it are missing. I'll let you read. Allah's apostle did not carry out the punishment. Remember, this is the verse on rajm, the verse on stoning those who commit adultery. We did recite this verse and understood and memorized it. Allah's apostle did carry out the punishment of stoning, and so did we after him. I'm afraid that after a long period of time, somebody will say, by Allah, we do not find the verse of Rajam in Allah's book, and thus they will go astray by leaving an obligation which Allah has revealed. So when you look at chapter 24, verse 2, which is the punishment for stoning today, it's 100 lashes. But there, it was stoning. Now it's 100 lashes. There's a change right there, and he's lamenting that a fact. Some verses are overlooked. Khuzaimah bin Ibn Thabit said, I see you have overlooked two verses and then have not written them down. They said, and which are they? And he replied, I headed directly. And then he goes automatically, spontaneously, he just recites, and it's from right out of Surah 9, Ayah 28. That's from Ibn Dawud. Some verses were changed. This is Ibn Malik. Abu Yunus, freedman of Aisha, mother of the believers, reported, Aisha, this is the wife of Muhammad, his favorite wife, married her when she was 7, consummated when she was 9. Said, when I should arrive at the verse of, and I'm not going to give it because I'll desecrate our poor brother's ears over here. When I arrived at the verse, I informed her and she ordered, well, write it this way. She added that she had heard it from the Apostle of Allah. Some verses are modified according to Ibn Dawud. 11 modifications by Al-Hajjaj himself, the governor of the Abdul Malik in Iraq. Some verses are substituted, but Allah said, none of our revelations do we abrogate or cause to be forgotten, but we substitute something better or similar, according to Sahih Bukhari, the most authoritative of all the compilations. And then finally, some verses were eaten by sheep. It was narrated by Aisha, the favorite wife of Muhammad, that the verse of stoning and of breastfeeding adult 10 times. Are you all familiar with what's going on here? Whenever someone came to a woman's house and the man was not there, the woman, before she could let him in, had to breastfeed him 10 times, and only then could she then allow a stranger into her house. So Aisha says that the verse of stoning and of breastfeeding of an adult 10 times was revealed, and the paper was with me under my pillow. When the messenger of Allah died, we were preoccupied with his death, and a tame sheep came in and ate it. It was obviously she gave it to the sheep because she was tired of breastfeeding all these men. So let's just go review. Summary. Now let's go back. Lost, disappeared, forgotten, canceled, missing, overlooked, changed, modified, substituted, eaten by sheep. Does this sound like a book which was compiled perfectly and completely like the Muslims are telling us? Does this not imply intentional human intervention right through its initial compilation? Does this not also suggest a disconnect between the earliest scholars and the modern scholars? In the intervening 1400 years, there's been a problem. If the Quran is eternal and from heaven, then it should have come down complete with no need for any changes by men later on.